Here comes Peter Cottontail, hopping down the bunny trail. Hippity hop hop, Easter's already come and gone, honey bus. This, of course, is the truth about markets. The ultimate truth, the real truth, the truth you don't see on Newsnight, the truth you don't see on the BBC, the truth you don't see on the CNN, because they're all conflicted. They're all embedded. Nobody's giving the truth anymore. There's no money in the truth anymore. The value of truth is nosediving on the FTSE, on the London Stock Exchange, on world commodity markets. Truth nosedives. Truth not worth the paper it's not written on. It's not written in any paper. Nobody writes about it anymore. Well, let's talk about some basic truths, shall we? A few basic truths. Number one, the tipping point on global warming has been reached. New studies revealed this week indicate that, in fact, the tipping point on global warming has been reached, and we're going to touch upon that a little bit later. Truth number two, Tony Blair is a mass murderer. That's point number two. That's the truth. It's an illegal war. He's part and parcel of killing people innocently for the corporate people who handle him. He's a war profiteer and a mass murderer. Point number three, the war on terror is a hoax. It's a hoax, the war on terror. It's a hoax. We saw evidence of this in the Financial Times this past week. There's a review of a book, two books actually. And the writer here is talking about must reads for anybody who's interested in the fraud that is engulfing the global finance market. And there's new evidence to suggest that the 9/11 situation, clear indication of market manipulation and insider trading, market manipulation and insider trading on the 9/11 situation. Stacey Herbert, who we're going to bring on the show very soon. She's waiting in the wings patiently.
I'm the one giggling in the background.
Hi, Stacey.
Hello.
Frank Portnoy in the Financial Times. He's reviewing two books. One's called Capitalism's Achilles Heel, and the other one's called The Washing Machine. But he talks about 9/11. Two pieces of evidence that support that 9/11 was market manipulation and insider trading. It had nothing to do with anything other than that. First, during the days immediately prior to 9/11, the volume of put options, which are investments that pay off only when the stock declines in price, surged in parent companies of American Airlines and United Airlines, according to an actual footnote in the 9/11 Commission report. And this could only be so if there was insider trading. I know this for a fact because I worked on Wall Street. And if you look at the volumes of put options and call options, it'll tell you, in fact, who's trading inside information. This is what groups like Stockwatch in New York look at. Stockwatch is an organization that is chartered to uncover insider trading. And according to that definition, this is a clear indication. So the people knew that it was going to happen, and they profited from it. Not only that, but an insider at the CIA knew about it. A guy who works with George Tenet over at the CIA. Allegedly, Buzzy Krongard from Alex Brown, as we've talked about on the show before. He was making trades on these options through his old firm, Alex Brown, profiting from inside information. Now, the second piece of major evidence that they have that the 9/11 events were known to insiders who profited from it is that the number of $100 bills surged right prior to the event. As people who knew that these events were going to take place were nervous that the banking system would be shut down, so they wanted to get as much cash in their pockets as possible. And you could just look at the volume of $100 bills circulating in the system, and it spiked right at that moment. Another clear indication that there was insider information. Now, the writer of this review of these two books, he concludes his review by saying, it is possible that terrorists profited from inside information in advance of their attacks. Not only that, not only is it possible, but it's a dead certainty as far as we're concerned here at The Truth About Markets. The U.S. government insists the answer is no, but it is hard to imagine that terrorists who are savvy in using shell companies and offshore trusts to hide the identity of their contributors would also think of trading on inside information or would not think of doing this or withdrawing cash early. You know, we also say that not only is it that these guys who perpetrated the crimes doing the trades to profit from it, but also the government insiders, Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, the guys who cooked the books, cooked the intelligence to launch an illegal war, they know about it. Not only is Blair a mass murderer, but he's part and parcel, he's part of the an insider trading ring, essentially. So he's committing fraud, financial fraud, murder, and I understand he doesn't cook very well either. He's not very handy around the house.
He doesn't play the property market very well either.
No, he's a combination you find in power of functional idiots. You know, guys who have been basically kiss-assing their way to the top, but that's their main skill. They have no underlying skill of governance. They have no underlying skill to lead. All they know how to do is pad their own pockets. And if they get enough people to buy into their scam along the way, they rise to incredible heights, just like we see in the United States.
Well, speaking of Blair and padding his pockets, he's famous for going on free holidays, right, from various celebrities and leaders around the world. He's on holiday this week, but this is the first time we actually don't know where he is. Where do you think he is? I think he might be in Crawford, Texas with George Bush, because George Bush just started his vacation down there as well.
You think so? They could be studying up on the casino market. He could be in Las Vegas.
Well, it turns out this week that, and I can't believe this story actually hasn't had more press or more response or more, like 2 million people, British people, marching in the streets of London. Well, that's illegal now, isn't it? It classifies you as a terrorist. But apparently, Tessa Jowell was secretly meeting with U.S. casino owners and promising them that she would lobby the U.K. Treasury to abandon money laundering laws, EU money laundering laws. So they were going to allow these U.S. casinos to come in. Remember, this was their new big scheme. All these U.S. casinos to turn Britain into a Vegas. And they were going to allow money laundering, basically. But I assume if you want to abandon money laundering laws, you want money laundering to happen there.
This is an amazing story to me. This is an amazing story to me. It's Tessa Jowell, right?
Tessa Jowell, yeah.
She was involved, as per your story there.
This is from The Observer last Sunday, yes.
Well, she was involved in an internal machinations of the government to overturn money laundering laws, right? To make room for casinos.
Yes.
Now, these are the money laundering laws that finance what they also refer to as terror.
Exactly.
So I don't understand. Where are their loyalties? Is it to the people who are getting blown up on buses? Or is it to the casinos and to the corporate terrorists? Where are their loyalties? Where's Tessa Jowell's loyalty? Does she have blood on her hands because she has effectively put money into the pockets of the suicide bombers by relaxing money laundering laws in the UK or trying to?
This is a question that should be asked in the UK in the same few weeks, within the same month of all these bombings happening.
Yeah, people in the UK who are listening to this show, if they know somebody or related to somebody who's been, you know, the victim of a suicide bomber, you know, they should vent their anger at Tessa Jowell. She's the one who's financing it effectively by relaxing or trying to relax money laundering laws. Is that how her hair got red? It's all bloody?
Well, this is...
She has red hair, doesn't she?
Yeah.
It's full of blood.
I think so. No, I think it's dyed. but listen...
It's dyed with the blood of people on the bus.
But I want to know, like, why we allow... Remember, Max Hastings this week also asked, when are the bottom 99.9% going to say stop? When are they going to tell bankers to stop ripping them off? Because Sir Max Hastings, you know, he's one of these elite, and he's even saying, we up here at the top have so much, and we keep stealing more, and nobody seems to stop us. But what's the point of even having money laundering laws? What's the point of being part of the EU with EU-wide money laundering laws for everybody but this one group of people?
It doesn't make any sense because you've therefore institutionalized a huge loophole.
Exactly.
So it's a scam. It's like what I said at the top of the show, which is that the war on terror is a hoax. It's a hoax being perpetrated by the government to divert attention away from their other money-making schemes. And they need the suicide bombers and the buses and the trains to get people into a state of fear and panic so that they can pass more laws to help corporations pad these guys' pockets even more. It's a hoax. You know, I mean, the people in the UK, they're being praised for being stoic, but we know now that they're basically more drunk than stoic. And I think we got a new thing over there, some new legislation, some new talk about a legislation. Hit me, baby. Hit me with that.
Yeah, well,
hit
at the same time that Tessa Jowell was lobbying for Tony Blair to introduce UK U.S.-style casinos into Britain, they're also introducing, they're relaxing drinking laws. They're liberalizing the laws. This is their nice word that they like to say. It's all liberal. We're liberalizing the laws. We're making trade free. Well, they're going to start allowing 24-hour drinking. And the Council of Her Majesty's Circuit Judges, which represents 600 judges in the UK, said that rapes and serious assaults will soar if pubs are allowed to open longer. Now, Tony Blair argues that actually why we're opening pubs 24 hours is we're trying to introduce a continental-style drinking. But Judge Charles Harris, a QC, told the Radio 4 program this week that continental-style drinking requires continental-style people. And, of course, you don't get continental-style people without continental-style economies or continental-style cultures.
Mm-hmm.
But Britain, there is no fostering of, like, human values. We know, in fact, that there Tony Blair wants to abandon the EU human rights laws. There are no human rights here.
Yeah.
So who's lying?
Well, the growth rates in the economy on the continent are different than the growth rates in Britain.
Mm-hmm.
They're higher in Britain. Why? Because they encourage this competitive winner-take-all mentality, which
yes.
creates winners and losers
yes.
and social unrest
yes.
and drunkenness.
We've seen this for many years in America, growing up there. It started with Reagan. But we've seen this competitive style sort of winners and losers. And Americans responded with overeating. British people, apparently, they seemingly respond with over-drinking.
Well, the point I'm trying to make is that in the UK, they have this style of doing business. What was the word they used? Liberalism?
Liberalism, yes.
Okay, there's a lot of synonyms that are used in place of liberalism, such as neoliberalism,
mm-hmm.
or laissez-faire capitalism,
mm-hmm.
free market economy. Mm-hmm. These are all, or neocon, the neoconservative movement. These are all basically used interchangeably to describe the same type of economic system, which is highly competitive, winner-take-all, which results in winners and losers. And when you have those types of wealth and income gaps, you have a problem of drunkenness, people drunk in the street. On the continent, it's a different style. It's not a winner-take-all. It's a socially aware model where you try to raise the mean level of income so that the very definition of wealth itself extends into non-tangibles like education, healthcare, public parks, public services. And as a result, they don't have drunken behavior because they're not as desperate. So they're not out drinking because they're not haven't been marginalized by the government and society. So you can't say, pick and choose from a smorgasbord and say, well, we want high growth, plus we want continental-style drinking. Because the two don't go together. You have to choose. Do you want high growth and suicide bombers, or do you want low growth and a more sound social environment? Those are your choices. You can't just pick and choose. You end up with a chimera, half this, half that. You know, it's like a strange amalgam of parts of a beast that doesn't exist. And they're completely smoking their own belly button lint if they think that they can magically put policies together that are the best of or benchmarking various world economies and societies for a system that only exists in people's imagination. It's completely impractical. And for Bush and Blair, you know, particularly Blair, as is the case here, to pursue this line and think that he can just borrow aspects of other cultures while keeping his high growth, high suicide bombing economic model in place is doing further injustice. It's adding insult to injury because he's holding out false hope to people as if they could do this. But it's impossible. It's as impossible as a fish riding a bicycle. It just doesn't work. Now, we talked about these words that are synonyms, liberalism, neoliberalism, laissez-faire, market, free market economics, and neoconservatism. Reminds me to something I saw just a couple of days ago. The word neoconservatism or neocon is now being used in a new Rolling Stones song.
Oh, really? They're getting political. Finally. It's been since the 60s that they were last political.
That's right. On this show, we have often said that the 60s are coming back in a big way, and we see more and more evidence of this every day. The Rolling Stones have decided to go back to their roots and shock and be political. They got a new song out, which is using the word neocon. It says, the lyrics say, "How come you're so wrong, my sweet neocon," referring to Bush. Then Mick sings about Condoleezza Rice, the U.S. National Security Advisor. And the line says,
isn't
here.
Isn't she Secretary of State now?
Oh, she's Secretary of State now?
Yeah, she used to be National Security Advisor.
Talk about sleeping away to the top, brother. I guess that's unfair. That's unfair.
That's
a sexist remark.
She did
not. I was being sexist there. She's a very capable woman with an extraordinarily tight butt, and I want to do her. Can
Max.
I say that on this show?
No, we're going to have to bleep that out
again.
Okay,
bleep that out. So anyway, the other line in the show, in the song, talking about Condoleezza Rice, it says she mocks the National Security Advisor in this press release on Drudge Report.
Well, she's not the National Security. Well, Drudge has it wrong.
Drudge, man, you're
dead
wrong. Remember,
she replaced Colin Powell. Yeah. He was Secretary of State. Now she is. She was promoted, and maybe he's talking about maybe the song is referring to the lead up to the war when she indeed was a National Security Advisor.
Yeah, maybe. I think you're giving Drudge more credit than he's due. I think it's just sloppy journalism.
Exactly.
But anyway.
We couldn't accuse that of us ever.
We verify everything six ways. It's a half dozen verifications.
Yeah, we use google.co.uk, google.com, and google.fr.
And PopPitch. And Karma Bank.
Exactly.
And we also, we ask people at the cafe.
Exactly. That's six times.
Anecdotal evidence. But he says in the song, he says to Condi Rice, quote, "You call yourself a Christian, I call you a hypocrite. You call yourself a patriot, well, I think you're full of shit."
He swears in a song?
Yep.
See,
how come you're so wrong, my sweet neocon? I think this is significant. It marks a significant turning point in pop culture. Because you know why? It's more profitable now to go against the right-wing neoconservatives than it has been over the past 4 years to embrace them. Because the money has been on go-long neoconservatism and neo-patriotism and neo-Nazism.
Apparently, even Fox News in America is starting to contribute to the Democrats because they're a little bit concerned because, you know, Rupert Murdoch has built his empire upon breasts, hasn't he?
Yep.
And now the neoconservatives, whose power base has derived from the neo-fundamentalist, religious fundamentalists, have had to, you know, tighten FCC laws about indecency. So now Fox, anyway, is having problems with this.
Yeah, the right-wing players, the big media players, are hedging their bet because they sense a shift in the pop culture. Because someone like Murdoch, his whole empire, he lives to influence politics. But his influence is derived from pushing softcore smut and political hysteria.
Exactly. Yeah.
So he needs to be on top of the softcore smut and political hysteria market if he wants to keep gleaning pennies from the poor suckers out there who buy his rags. So if he thinks that there's a shift in the wind from extreme right-wing American neo-fascism to 60s-style liberalism, if you want to call it that, I would just call it democracy. Because, I mean, democracy is so alien in American culture right now that Americans wouldn't know it if they bit them on the nose. You know, they wouldn't know democracy from a hole in the wall. They don't know what it is anymore. The word freedom and democracy, they don't have no idea what it means anymore. They think it's a brand at Gap. They have failed to make the connection to their own birthright. Speaking of their own birthright in America, the birthright of America means that every American has the right to exercise their freedoms as expressed by the Constitution and the Bill of Rights.
Yes,
per the revolution in America. Now, I know in the UK they never had a revolution. There was a thing with Cromwell.
But he stopped at the last minute. As soon as Parliament recognized him and said, okay, what do we need to stop you from killing us?
Yeah,
and he said, just give me power.
That pussy Cromwell.
Uh-huh.
He stopped short of actually effecting a revolution in this country. So you still have like
He sold
these
out.
These weirdos in the, sitting on the throne.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Know, waving from the balcony.
I've been practicing that wave, actually.
Yeah, it looks like you're playing the harp. What the hell?
It's a, I think it should be a new dance. Maybe it goes with the 60s. You know, it's like
very
we could
nice.
Be the new Sid Vicious and Johnny Rotten.
I'm hoping to be. I did it my way. God Save the Queen.
Mm-hmm.
It's all for you audience here. Residence FM 104.4 down there in what's that area of town that they're
West,
out there?
The West End.
No, that other town. Shoreditch.
Oh, Shoreditch, yeah.
Everyone's down in Shoreditch who listens to this show. They got
yeah.
a big bong pipe and like a month's worth of hash.
Every time we go to Shoreditch, everybody knows who we are.
They go, hey, Max and Stacy, I listened to the show, I think, but I was stoned.
I kind of remember it.
I kind of remember what the show is. You guys talk about farming, right? It's
yeah,
a farming report?
Everybody always says, oh, cool markets.
Yeah,
you're talking
cool.
about vegetable
you're
and cheese
talking about vegetable
markets?
And tomatoes? Down at the open markets? Yeah, man, I'm cooking up some hash brownies. Come on over. But anyway, I was talking about the birthright of Americans and the
yeah.
Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the mm-hmm. Revolutionary War that was experienced in America during the latter part of the 18th century, something that was missed in the U.K. Matter of fact, we revolted against you, U.K. people.
Yeah.
You're the revoltee. You're revolting. We're the revolters. But anyway, you know, as part of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, the sacred documents, the founding documents of the United States of America, the greatest country that has ever been in the planet since for the last 20 years, anyway, except recently. It says in these documents, let me give you a phrase from the document. You can tell me which amendment does this apply to. Okay, there's several, a bunch of amendments that give people freedoms. Which one does this apply to? The right to revolt.
I know the answer. Can I tell you? It's a Second Amendment. You know, Britain doesn't have a written constitution.
Really?
So this is kind of new to them. I think they should get one of the constitutions, and I think they should adopt the Second Amendment.
Yeah, listen, let me explain to y'all in Britain something that we have in America. It's not used the way it should be used, but we got it anyway. It's called the right to revolt, and it's in the Second Amendment of the Bill of Rights, the Constitution.
Yes.
The Constitution.
It starts with the Bill of Rights. And then it goes into the Constitution.
Yeah, I read it so many times, it's a blur to me now.
Yeah, you did not. Remember there used to be cartoons when we were little that would sing it? Like,
yeah, this is the Constitution. You know, now they say,
we
this
the
is Britney Spears' butthole.
In order to form a more perfect union.
Americans know more about that site, cameltoe.com, than they do about the Constitution.
Oh, please. Okay, so the Second Amendment.
Yeah, it's called the right to revolt, okay? This means that, you see, in America, there's since we revolted against your government and the dictatorship and tyranny of your government, we wanted to give the people of America the right to revolt against one's own government if America's elites started becoming wankers and toffs like you find in Britain today. Well, you know what? People in America who run America have become wankers and toffs. They become elites, blue bloods, aristocracy, monarchical. So therefore, it's time for Americans under the Second Amendment right to, get this, bear arms.
Well, it is quite funny because both Kerry and George Bush are actually related to our own Queen Elizabeth here.
Our own Queen Elizabeth. You just already defected, haven't you?
No.
Aren't you
okay,
American?
Wait. We have to go back a little bit because British people are usually quite amused by this whole notion of Americans. Everybody's packing a gun, aren't they?
That's right.
Now, the right to bear arms
That's
is
right.
what the Second Amendment is.
That's
and
right.
And the reason why you have the right to bear arms is that there should be a citizen militia. Now, the U.S. federal government argues that this is what the National Guard is. However, the National Guard is financed and answerable to the federal government. Whereas if you read the entire Second Amendment, apparently it's meant to suggest that the people have the right to form their own militias together to protect themselves from the government. Because remember, the founders of the Constitution were also part of this whole Enlightenment going on in France, and they were part of the French Revolution. They shared ideas, and of course at the time they realized that the nature of government is to become corrupt. And this is in order to protect you from corrupt governments.
It's a checks and balances.
It's a checks and balances.
And it gives the citizens of the entire population to the right to create a population-wide militia whose purpose is to take the guns, of which there are 250 million in America, storm the Capitol, take back the government from the tyrants, and replay the Revolutionary War. And that's where we're at in American history right now in the year 2005. It's time for Americans to exercise the Second Amendment right, storm Washington with their guns, take back their government. A lot of people think in America that the right to bear arms has to do with the freedom to shoot your neighbor if you don't like the size of their Toyota.
Yeah, that's true.
Or if you're unhappy about trick-or-treaters coming to your house on Halloween, you can blow them away.
Yes, but
that's not what it's for.
I think there are signs that people are starting to exercise their Second Amendment rights. Because remember, this past week in New Mexico, in Bernalillo County, somebody in New Mexico shot down a sheriff's helicopter, which is
really
like Baghdad in the streets of New Mexico. And also in Denver, Colorado, an Air Force colonel was found to have defaced all these cars, vandalized 10 cars at Denver International Airport for they all had bumper stickers on their car supporting Bush. So he crossed out the pro parts, left the Bush, and then put some sort of expletive, which I wasn't able to glean from
F
the
Bush.
Yeah. So he was caught on camera. But this is a high-ranking colonel in the Air Force who has been, I mean, America is starting to, there is something changing there. It is starting to.
I think the pendulum is swinging away from the hard right neo-Nazi of the current administration, which Blair is included in that administration. He's a new wing of the White House, the Blair wing. He's like the Blair Witch Project, isn't he? He kind of comes in the night and spooks everybody.
Yeah, but you know how all those kids who blow away their classmates in America, they always blame, who's that rocker? The goth rockers.
Marilyn Manson.
They always blame Marilyn Manson. Oh, I was listening to Marilyn Manson songs. That's my defense. Well, this colonel, I think he's blaming the Rolling Stones.
It's all getting pear-shaped.
It's all going very 1960s.
Now, if you're in the UK and you don't think you have a reason to bear arms, storm down to the House of Parliament and take back your government from that psychopath Blair, check this out. They're going to put radio frequency ID tags in everyone's license plate in Britain. So every single license plate on every single car is going to have a radio frequency ID tag that'll be connected to the satellites hovering above, tracking your every movement, every inch down the highway you go. You'll get charged, of course, for congestion. You'll get charged for carbon emission. Plus, you'll be tracked with a huge database owned by the government, who will then use that database information to predict which one of you in the UK might be thinking terrorist thoughts. You don't have to actually commit a terrorist crime anymore. Pre-crime is now what they're into, based on database mapping, database miming, database mining. I don't know why I said miming. I'm thinking of Marcel Marceau.
Yeah, were you?
What if he were to do an act about database and license plates? It would be an interesting show, wouldn't it?
I would pay to go see it.
It's database mining.
I would like to see that on a listen to that on a podcast, actually.
And more importantly, they'll take the database information that they glean from tracking your automobile with the chips in the plates to marketers who'll say, oh, you know, we noticed that you like to drive down this particular street, and there's three florists on that street. We've got a special on flowers this week at Flowers R Us. Send us your credit card number, and we'll send you a dozen roses. Have a nice day. And you'll be bombarded with ads like this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, until such time as these radio frequency ID tags are implanted in your skull. And then you'll have commercials playing in your mind 24 hours a day. Did you see the information, the story last week, where scientists believe that they now can map, or they can identify digitally, electronically, people's auras and thoughts?
They've built a computer that is able to read your mind.
Yeah.
That's pretty terrifying.
It is, because it just means you're going to hear advertisements being played in your mind 24 hours a day, in the womb. So when the egg meets the sperm and the zygote is created, that's the time to start selling. Even before you get out of the womb, you're going to be bombarded with ads for AOL, and credit cards, mortgages. Bradford and Bingley will be inside the womb selling your fetus high equity mortgage products.
Speaking
before you even get out of the womb. You'll be aborting yourself just to avoid bankruptcy.
Speaking of that, you see this week that Britain's borrowing binge shows no sign of slowing. I think they might actually have this device already implanted in people's brains here.
People are borrowing involuntarily. I think that's a point that needs to be made. They're not thinking about borrowing. They're borrowing involuntarily. Like breathing is an involuntary action. They just borrow involuntarily. They don't think about it. If you send them an offer to borrow, they'll borrow. They don't think about it. It's a reflexive action, like breathing and heart beating of their hearts.
Okay, keep that in mind, that breathing thing, because I want to come back to a story about that. But apparently there's been an 8.3% increase in spending on MasterCard plastic this year. And the boss of MasterCard in the UK, Paul Lucraft, says, "We're encouraged to see our businesses proving resilient to concerns over the state of the wider UK economy." It's proving resilient. I think it shows that there is no income anymore. There's no income growth. Jobs are weak. And people are just needing to spend on credit cards for their necessities.
You know who becomes resilient?
Who?
A battered wife. You beat her for a few months or a few years. She becomes resilient, doesn't she?
This
doesn't
is
make
what they
it
say.
Any less of a battered wife situation. The UK consumer is beating themselves senseless by borrowing beyond their means. Now they're becoming resilient because they're numb to it. They're numb to their credit. How many people around the world do we read every single day in countries all over the world killing themselves because of their debt problems? Every day you read a story like this.
Actually, this is a shocking story this week in that nobody in the West covered this. But speaking of suicide debtors, there was a suicide bomber on a bus in China this week on Monday, apparently. A 42-year-old man who killed himself because he couldn't get treatment for his lung cancer, and his family was heavily in debt, and his children were unable to go to school because of a lack of money. Anyway, this guy blew himself up on a bus with a homemade device, kind of like what you saw this past month in London. And he blew himself up. 31 other people were injured. I don't think anybody died. But that's pretty remarkable, because we always do talk about America and China being the two suicide consumption societies. They're these massive consumption societies.
Let me say this. There's an inverse relationship between life and debt. The more debt you have, the less valuable life becomes.
Mm.
So by banks pushing debt, they're diminishing the value of people's lives.
Yes.
And it shows up in the suicide numbers.
Mm-hmm.
When people have a certain amount of debt, they simply say, you know what, I'm going to kill myself. And this is what's happening. In the UK, and you see students in the UK who've got these top-up fees, which is a euphemism for debt. And you've got people who can't go to the hospital anymore because it's been privatized, and the costs are now beyond their reach. Mm-hmm. And their other hospital, the NHS, has become a place where you go get the killer bugs to kill you anyway.
Yes.
So they don't go there anymore.
No.
So they take on debt. The mortgage property market is rigged. It's a fixed... It's a rigged market. It's Bradford and Bingley and Barclays and all these banks are predatory lending and creating a rigged market. It's a hoax that people take on these huge debts well beyond they could ever pay back in several lifetimes. That's also debt. And there's an inverse relationship between life and debt. More debt, top yourself. That's what's happening more and more. Just to top yourself. And, of course, in the debt markets, they have spread bets. As we reported on this show a few weeks ago, people taking out bets on their own life and then killing themselves. So
yeah, this
that
old man, 92-year-old man, who has debt, who is in debt, but he wouldn't be able to afford his funeral, so he's taken a bet out on his life that would pay off the cost of his funeral.
Then he kills himself.
No, I don't think he's allowed to kill himself. But speaking of old people, did you see also, speaking of this corporate infiltration to every aspect of our life, apparently researchers have discovered that a lot of old people die, as most of us wish to, in their sleep. And they found that the reason why you die in your sleep is that your brain forgets to breathe.
Right.
So now that they found this little point which allows you to forget to breathe when you're like 95 years old, they're going to try to find a cure for it. They don't want you to die peacefully in your sleep.
No.
No. They want you to keep on consuming.
Keep consuming.
They're not going to let you get out that easy, are they?
No. That's why they're against abortion.
Mm-hmm.
They need more consumers. And the evangelicals are coming to Britain to convince British people that they should not have the right for safe abortions either. We want to bring as many motherless and fatherless children into the world as possible to get addicted to Krispy Kreme and Starbucks and Nike and Tesco crap.
Well, regardless, I think the tipping point has come anyway. So it's not like it's going to all these interventions are going to stop anything, because apparently this is the biggest story of the week.
Tipping point?
The tipping point.
We talked about it at the top of the show, the tipping point
story. I know.
Now we're going to do the story?
Yeah, because it's something that needs to be talked about. And I'm not sure it's going to be talked about anywhere else but here. But apparently vast expanses of Western Siberia are undergoing an unprecedented thaw that could dramatically increase the rate of global warming. Now, Dr. Kropotkin, Sergei Kropotkin, who's this head of Tomsk State University in Western Siberia, has found that he calls it an ecological landslide that is probably irreversible and is undoubtedly connected to climactic warming. He adds that the thawing probably began 3 or 4 years ago, but now that it started, he said there's no way to stop it, and all this methane gas, which is hidden underneath, it's contained inside this thaw in the permafrost. It's 20 times more powerful.
The bogs, right? There are bogs.
Peat bogs.
Peat bogs.
So it's 20 times, the methane held inside these peat bogs is 20 times more powerful of a global warming conducive than
the CO2 emissions.
Than CO2. So, you know, these carbon emissions trading platforms, we should just start putting methane. This is like, it's basically over, is what they say. The tipping point has been reached. We thought it was going to happen 40, 50 years down the road if we didn't stop, but it's been reached because the Siberia has the largest peat bogs in the world.
And what about the average temperature?
They said it's going to actually increase 10 to 25% more than previously thought.
Right. So that's right. That would put the parts per million of CO2 into the atmosphere above the 400 threshold.
Oh, yeah, way, 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 way beyond that.
And that's considered the tipping point. That's irreversible damage at this point.
Yes.
Even if all industrial activity stopped on a dime and not a single cubic meter of carbon dioxide or methane were released into the atmosphere, not a single cow fart escaped from a cow sphincter, it would still be too late.
Exactly. Actually, did you realize, speaking of cow farts, there was a story this week that just outside of Los Angeles is one of the highest concentration of cows in the world. There are all these dairy farms there.
Mm.
And scientists say that actually more methane comes out of their burps. They burp more than they fart.
Oh, they regurgitate their food.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way. They chew the cud.
Yeah.
That's where that phrase comes from. They're chewing their own food more than once. I tried doing that a few times. It's not pleasant.
No, it was pretty disgusting, I have to say.
I like the phrase in your story, though, that the man used. I assume it's a man writing, of course, being a sexist.
Well, his name is Dr. Sergei. How do you pronounce that name? Sergei.
Any one of those is okay. Yeah, pick one. But I like the phrase he used, climactic warming.
Yes.
Instead of global warming.
Mm-hmm.
It's climactic warming.
Yeah.
It's the warming trends here at the climax of the trend. The trend has now reached its apotheosis, its climax stage, the end game, the omega, the end. We're not anywhere near the end of this show, are we? We're going to keep going.
Actually, there's a story with relevance to the British audience out there about global warming.
Oh, yeah.
You know, many British people retire or build second homes or third homes or speculative homes in Spain. And in Spain this year, there have been record numbers of jellyfish, so much that they've been having to, like, thousands, tens of thousands of people having to seek medical help because there are so many jellyfish.
Yeah.
And the problem is, of course, that this record drought brought on by 350,000 British people building homes last year alone in Spain. Record drought, record high temperatures in the Mediterranean have caused a lot of the fresh water to evaporate, so the concentrations of salt are quite high. So the jellyfish have been coming inshore, trying to get near the freshwater rivers pouring into the sea.
Mm-hmm.
So they're stinging all these people. But also there are the population of large fish have been completely decimated in the Mediterranean, and turtles, and these usually eat the jellyfish. So this is global warming in action. This is GDP growth in action.
This is a classic example of you can't put 10 pounds of crap into a 5-pound bag. The ecology of Spain can only sustain a certain amount of development.
Exactly.
But the people who go there, because they live in the UK, which has this mantra of winners and losers, mm-hmm. and this competition-minded economy, this yes. neoliberalism, laissez-faire market economy, they get it into their heads that they it's their responsibility to seek their personal gains, no matter what the cost, mm-hmm. because their greed will lift all boats. The tide of their greed, of the individual greed, lifts all boats. And this is at the centerpiece of the philosophy of neoliberalism, or laissez-faire capitalism, as expressed by the novelist Ayn Rand mm-hmm. in her classics Atlas Shrugged or The Fountainhead, which are the Bibles of people like Alan Greenspan and industrialists in America and in the UK. They often refer to her work as being the source of their inspiration. And she espouses this philosophy of individual accomplishment is the tide upon which all boats rise, which is really cool, except when you factor in the point that the ecology is inelastic. I'll throw that phrase in there, inelastic. In other words, if the economy is growing 3% a year, unless planet Earth is growing concomitantly at 3% a year, you begin to have diminished returns because the ecology is the collateral upon which the economy is built. If your economy is racing ahead faster than the ecology is, that means you are destroying the very collateral upon which you are building your future. And now, according to the story that you talked about just a few minutes ago, in the area of CO2 and methane emissions, we are now at the tipping point where the ecology, no matter what is done right now, today, it will not have the necessary effect needed to counteract terminal carbon poisoning due to human greed. Terminal carbon poison due to Tony Blair and Gordon Brown and George Bush and Romney Rumsfeld greed. To your greed. If you shop at Tesco, you're greedy. You're stupidly greedy because the low prices at Tesco are offset by even lower wages at your job. Because the reason they can charge low prices is because they're sourcing the stuff from China.
So lower wages, but also higher ecological costs.
And higher ecological costs. So you lose two ways. Mm-hmm. If you just paid a little bit more for your local farmer, you would be saving your job. You would be getting higher quality produce. And you would be helping to continue the ecology that we need to survive in. But by greedily shopping at Tesco, because you're a greedy, no good, self-interested, Ayn Rand reading UK wanker, you're killing yourself, you're killing your family, you're killing the planet, and you're supporting the wealth and income gaps that are the inspiration for the suicide bombers. There's a direct link. A equals B equals C. It's a direct link. And that's the truth about markets, and that's what we talk about on this show on Residence 104.4 FM in the West End of London every Saturday night with Max and Stacey. We do the show, then we have a slight or a little repast, a little dinner, then we get naked, we make mad passionate love until 3 in the morning. Then we get up the next day, and we read Simon Jenkins in the Sunday Times.
Yes, that's true.
Because
he's one of our favorite writers.
He and George Monbiot seem to be the only two people in the UK that haven't had a Blairotomy.
And Max Hastings.
It's not a lobotomy, it's a Tony Blairotomy. Max Hastings, you know, he wrote a very good piece, which you talked about earlier. He had some really good quotes.
Yes, he said that the next revolution, if it ever happens, he said, instead of being kill the lawyers, which have been the mantra of previous revolutions, it's going to be kill the bankers. Because it was in a column a week ago where he was commenting on this growing wealth and income gap, and that there doesn't seem to be any sort of popular dissent about it, that people seem perfectly happy to pay Dick Grosso, you know, head of the Wall Street in London, in America.
The New York Stock Exchange.
New York Stock Exchange, collecting $800,000 a day in a salary over his term.
$800,000 a day.
$800,000 every single day to show up at such a tough, tough job. Where's the market in that? That seems just ridiculous. Who on earth is really worth $800,000 a day?
I mean, was there
nobody else on earth that could have done the job? Clearly there was, because it seems like the market has continued to survive without him.
It's a market manipulation, and we're going to talk about that more in a second. But before we leave the Max Hastings, I just wanted to point out that on this show, since the beginning of the show, we've always suggested people should kill bankers.
No, we haven't.
What?
That was just metaphorical. It's now a crime to suggest that.
Oh, I'm
even
sorry.
Though Max Hastings himself did it.
You have to create it
as satire. You have to say it as satire.
Oh, okay. I'm being satirical.
We should.
But, I mean, it's not for nothing that these suicide bombers keep going off in banks, like the 9/11, Istanbul.
Well, the chief of police this week did say that the city of London, where all the bankers live, is next. He said it is going to happen. But yeah. I think he was just bribing. He was trying to get some payola, because he did say, oh, by the way, our costs have increased 50% for the Metropolitan Police since 7/7.
And his salary.
And his
Does
salary.
He get $800,000 a day?
No,
it's Britain. He gets $80 a day.
Exactly.
And all the sandwiches and prawn sandwiches he can eat. Have a prawn sandwich, chief of police, and here's some new bullets.
No, but we have pointed out since the beginning of the show the truth about markets, that it is bankers who have been underwriting these wealth and income gaps around the world.
Yeah, because the attacks are tied to insider trading and market manipulation, and that's why they're focused on banks. You know, Al-Qaeda doesn't attack the New York Metropolitan Museum of Art, does it?
No,
you know, they don't attack the Tate Museum or the Tate Modern, do they?
No, not yet.
Because these cultures place no value on art. So they know that, who cares? If Al-Qaeda blew up Tate Modern, you think anyone would even notice?
Yeah, Al-Qaeda are more like the U.S. duopoly, because the Taliban, who were religious fundamentalists as well, they did blow up those Buddhist temples. Remember, they blew up those famous Buddhas over in Afghanistan.
And and Steve Martin made a joke about it on the Academy Awards.
Did he?
Yeah, he had a huge Oscar.
Uh-huh.
And he made a joke about the Taliban. This was before 9/11, I believe, or right after 9/11.
Oh, I don't know.
Was it right before 9/11? It was the Taliban when they blew it up. And he made a joke about it, that there was a huge Taliban operation. And in America, culture is a joke. I mean, if the Tate Modern blew up, nobody in the UK would know, except for those wankers at Newsnight on Friday nights when they do that show with Christie Walk.
Yep.
What's it called? The
Newsnight Review.
Newsnight Review. Only those people would know.
Mm-hmm.
That funny guy who kind of wobbles around in his seat, that big guy?
Mark Lawson.
With no hair? He'd be like, today, this week, the Tate Modern blew up. And Johnny Depp starring in a new movie about a lost boy in a chocolate factory. We've got three guests here who'll discuss whether or not this is the end of civilization as we know it, the beginning of the Mars bar, or how many did I eat before the show to get myself to be so goddamn fat? Stay tuned for News and Art Review right after this. Ding, dong, dong, dong. Oh, hi. I'm Jeremy Paxman. I go on and on and on and on. I was Jeremy Paxman. Speaking of insider trading and market manipulation, my sweet pea, I want to draw your attention to this story from the Seattle Times. It talks about the following. All I need to do is read to you the top little bullet points here to engender a reverse peristalsis remark action in you, which is the technical term for throwing up. Drug researchers leak secrets to Wall Street. Doctors testing new drugs are sworn to keep their research secret until drug companies announce the final results. But elite Wall Street firms looking to make quick profits have found a way to harvest these secrets. How do they do it? They pay doctors to divulge the details early. So here you have a complete and utter breakdown in society. You've got the medical profession being undermined by greed. You've got greedy Wall Street bankers who, you would have thought 9/11 would have taught them a lesson. They would have said, maybe they wake up and smell the coffee there. You know, like maybe we're doing something that's not right. All this greedy banking where we disenfranchise and bankrupt foreign territories for lining our own pockets. Maybe we should look in the mirror and examine our behavior a little bit. But no, they simply went on for bigger and better scams. Like this scam, drug researchers leak secrets to Wall Street. And the medical industry, as you know, in America is a sham. No one has any health insurance. How many people are without health insurance?
Something like 50 million people in a population of 280 million.
How many people are at or below the poverty line in America?
25%.
How many people, you know, the unemployment number we talk about. We say that in the U.S. they say it's 5%. And in the Europe, it's what they say is 10%. Mm-hmm. However, in the Europe, the number percentage of the population of poverty is?
In Europe, it's 7%.
And in America?
In France, it's 7%. In Norway, it's 4%.
And in America?
25%.
25%. Uh-huh. So the poverty in America is 25% higher than it is in Europe. But they have technically, they have a lower unemployment rate. But that's only if you want to say that people who are working at Walmart, who are subsidized by the federal government for their health, who are living on slave wages, are employed. You'd have to say that those people are employed. They're not really employed, are they? They're slaves. It's like saying the slaves are they have a job, don't they? The slaves have a job. Would you say if slavery were alive and well in America today, as if it's not, but you know, technically, you don't have black people working on cotton plantations like you did 150 years ago. You've got instead Chinese people working on Chinese plantations for America and Walmart and Tesco. But let's say in America, you still had the agricultural system of 150 to 200 years ago. Now, would America say that the slaves are employed or unemployed?
They would say they're employed.
That's right.
Because it looks better on paper.
That's right. So,
and it justifies their big salaries. It justifies Dick Grosso getting $800,000 a day because the economy is growing, they say.
Yeah, you can have a job too, picking cotton. You know, you can have a job too, being a slave. You know, this is America today.
Yes, they apparently added 207,000 jobs, which is barely keeping up with the rate of population increase. They added 207,000 jobs last month. But half of them are in retail. Half of them are at Walmart. And the other half are in the leisure, so in hotels.
Yeah.
And, of course, there was a net loss of manufacturing jobs yet again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're replacing well-paid jobs with badly paid jobs.
I think it's called niggeronomics. That's basically the technical term for it. You in the UK, something to look forward to, because Tony Blair has sold you out in your future to America, and you're involved in an illegal war, and you're paying the price of that every day. But it's not as if the black community is taking this lying down, honey.
Apparently not. What's going on?
We got a serious rise of black pride in America. There's a man. He has a show, the Judge Mathis Show. And basically, this guy has come out on his nationally syndicated Coast to Coast show. This is part of that trend we're talking about, the 60s, are alive and well.
Mm-hmm.
He said that the current administration in America, they all need to be locked up because they are all criminals and they are all thieves, said Judge Greg Mathis, the star of syndicated TV show, The Judge Mathis Show. He made his remarks to an enthusiastic crowd in Atlanta to commemorate the 40th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Participants are launching a 2-year campaign to extend and strengthen key aspects of the act when it expires in 2007. He goes on to say that it is indeed a criminal to steal an election and within 2 years run up a federal deficit of $500 billion, send our young people over to Iraq to die for an unjust war. What they're doing is criminal. Guess who else was at the event? Harry Belafonte. He calls the current administration, the black members of the current administration, black tyrants. See, the black population in America, they know civil rights. They know how to rise up and push back. They're not going to lie down forever. Black power. Black is beautiful.
But I'm surprised that this Voting Rights Act is actually up for renewal. So their voting rights weren't made permanent?
It's up for renewal, 2007.
That's so strange. It's the most bizarre thing, that they could theoretically lose them. If remember, Bush forgot to re-vote on the NRA, the rifle, the assault ban weapons.
Mm-hmm. They let it expire. That's right.
Yeah, the assault weapons ban.
That's right. Remember, so more people have assault weapons, they can go storm Washington with assault weapons.
Yeah.
They got an
AK-47. So now the civil rights movement might be thrown back to the 60s if black people are denied the vote in 2 years' time.
That's right. That's what that says. Now, the movement in America right now is to renew the act and to get it extended to include more things. Mm-hmm. This guy Mathis goes on to say, this is pretty well said, I think. He goes, quote, "They shot and missed when they enslaved, segregated, and oppressed our people. They shot and missed when they stole the past two presidential elections. They shot and missed when they denied our right to vote." See, when the left gets angry, they get eloquent, which is what they have as one of their major assets. Mm-hmm. Because the right, because they're basically supporting the current power structure, they don't have to be eloquent. They just need to give out money. There's a difference between graft and eloquence. Mm-hmm. Because the left is broke, they have to replace the fact that they're broke and poor with eloquence. That's why so many writers and artists are siding with the left, because there's a need to express one's eloquence accordingly. It's very difficult to be a plutocrat and be expressing oneself in any elegant manner, because the market doesn't applaud right plutocratude, if I can use that word.
Plutocrude?
I just made it up. It's a plutocrat in some other word. It's a neologism, which I think that is a word.
Uh-huh. I'm sure it is.
So then he goes on to say that intimidation and discrepancies, Nancy Pelosi of California was talking about the fact that the administration is corrupt. And Maxine Waters, Democrat from California, she says she's going to take on Bush and Cheney and Tom DeLay. And musician Stevie Wonder addressed the group, and he's got a new song he's putting together. Says, "At this time, we have a choice to make. Father God is watching while we cause Mother Earth so much pain." So, okay, so maybe that's not a great eloquent line of song, but in other words, Stevie Wonder, who's a musician, goes back to the 60s. He's becoming active. He's becoming poetic. You got Mick Jagger, who, with the Rolling Stones in the 60s, put forward a lot of poetry, you know, pop poetry, pop art. You know, before the 60s, there was no such thing as pop art. You didn't have pop. You didn't have Andy Warhol to come along and identify the artistic overtones in the most mundane of objects, did you?
No.
So now, you know, since pop art was invented, we had the bull market. Now, the echo of pop art with the same people who were there at that time are coming back and saying, wait a minute, these people are absolutely working against the interest of us as a society. And they're using what they have, which is free, which is their artistic eloquence, because they're broke. I mean, Mick Jagger's not broke, obviously, but he's broke in terms of being able to communicate through mass media. He's not a Rupert Murdoch. He's not a Silvio Berlusconi who owns all the networks in Italy.
Yeah, and I think he's actually buying the last free newspaper, according to the press this week.
Even Mick Jagger now is feeling a backlash from this so-called niggeronomics. I mean, this is a phrase which I would put myself into this category. I'm not a plutocrat. I don't own TV stations. I don't shape the news. I don't wage illegal wars. I don't murder Muslims for profiteering for Exxon. That puts me at the lowest rung of the economic ladder. There's no middle class anymore. There's only revolutionaries and the revolutionaries. They've bifurcated society again. They've made it monarchs and serfs. Lords and serfs. So I'm not a lord, I can tell you this. I'm a serf. And as such, I identify with everyone out there who is fighting the power. Okay? And I encourage you, the listener, unless you're Lord Snooty Puss out there in Devon, to join the crusade, so to speak. Don't want to use that word in the wrong context. Well, we got to go pretty soon. We only have a minute or so left. If you want to send us an email, the address would be thetruthaboutmarkets@gmail.com. You can write that email to either Max or Stacy at thetruthaboutmarkets@gmail.com. It goes to the same place, which is, first it goes to the CIA. And some of them get to us. The ones that say, like, sharing recipes for hash browns, we get those. Anything with politics attached, we never see. Or you could just send us a mind wave. Just think positive thoughts. We'll pick it up on our interstellar mind exchange market.
Okay. And we'll see you next week. Same time, same place.
All right, y'all. Till then. Bye, y'all.